Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Slow down. I have had a very, very bad day, and I would like to know exactly what the fuck is going on here. Sydney?
Cotton Meat Billy Loomis's mother. She's the killer.
What? And who's that?
The other killer, Mickey.
Okay.
Look, Cotton.
Shut up. So. You're not Debbie Salt, are you? You're not with the Post Telegraph.
No, but I can still help you, Cotton. You don't need her. Let me kill her. As long as she's alive, you're never going to be the lead story. That's what you really want, isn't it, Cotton? If you really want to be in the spotlight, just let me kill her right now. Then you're the only survivor. You're the star. She sent you to prison for a year. Personally, I think it's rather poetic.
We are now in the third edition of
no,
the Capricorn
Cotton,
saga. If I haven't made this clear, Capricorn is final girl season. It is a time of survival and winning at any cost. Today, we are celebrating one of my favorite things in the world, which are the Scream movies. We have a new Scream film coming out on January 14th, the first in 10 years, perfectly released during Capricorn season. As part of the celebration, I have welcomed two of my dearest favorites. We have returning Luminary's guest Jake Cornell and the beloved Brian Bahi. Welcome to both of you. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, so I guess first of all, can you both just clue me in on how you got into these movies and just this whole part of the culture generally?
So what I'll say is I'm realizing in this moment, like, Scream is huge for me. Scream has been huge for me for, I would say, like, 15 years, maybe longer than that. No, maybe, like, I definitely loved the Scream movies when Scream 4 came out, but I'm realizing now I have no memory of when I, like, first fell in love. Like, it must have been one of them being rerun on television and me watching, like, the TV version. But I don't, it feels so like, oh yeah, Scream is a perfect movie that I love and is part of my like identity. But I don't actually remember when I onboarded that.
I understand. Yeah. Brian?
Scream for me has been huge since I was a child. I don't think I saw the movie until I was like maybe like 10, 11-ish. But I remember like being at my cousin's house and like playing with her Barbies, and we like played Scream with her Barbies. Which sounds like how, like, you know, like an actual serial killer's like origin story.
Yes.
But then I did tell David this, that there was one summer in high school when all I would watch Scream 3 literally every single day.
I have a feeling that
you
Scream
3
is going to take
every single day.
Every single day. It was like the one movie that we had on like DVD or whatever.
Oh my God.
Which, like, that's perfect. Like, if you're going to have to watch a movie every day, like, it should be that, you know?
It was like, I would watch like Today. It was like, I would wake up, like, watch Today and like watch all like the morning shows or whatever. And then I would like watch like whatever was on like MTV. And then around like 2, 3-ish, I would just like pop in Scream 3 and just like let it play.
Yeah. And we're all Buffy girls. So I think, like, deeply, Jake, even you saying, like, that you don't know when it entered your consciousness, I'm like, we understand the sequence of events that would have led to you discovering it. You know, we understand how you got to it.
100%. I also will say, like, woman on a mission. I will say that, like, I think part of it was also I had, like, I went through a bout when I was, like, maybe 9, 10, where I was, like, I had a year where I was, like, I was really struggling with nightmares. And so I was afraid of watching anything scary because I was, like, trying to not trigger nightmares. And I didn't know. I also don't think I would have understood necessarily the, like, parody satire tone of Scream. And I didn't know that it wasn't, like, I just assumed, like, Scream must be the scariest fucking movie out there because it's, like, such a popular horror film. And so then to, like, find out, like, watch it later and be like, oh, wait, no, this is, like, genius, was, like, I think a little bit more of, like, a gratifying reveal to be had.
Yeah, my stepmom took me to see Scary Movie in theaters, and I was... When my stepmom took me to see Scary Movie, and then when my mom took me to see Sweetest Thing, I was just, like... I truly was too young to understand any of what was happening. And my stepmom was...
How old were you when your mom took you to Sweetest Thing?
That is like, way too young.
That is so funny.
I just, like... I literally didn't even know... Like, I didn't understand what was going on in the scene where Thomas Jane eats her out. Like, I just didn't get it. And then when we saw Scary Movie, which, like, heavily... parodizes the first two Screams.
Yeah.
My stepmom was horrified that I, by what she was exposing me to, but I just, like, again, had no idea what was going on. And then when Bride of Chucky came out, I saw the preview on TV and was so terrified that I couldn't sleep for months. So yeah, I think I'm similar to you, Jake, where I was like, no way, I could never handle this. But then there's something about being gay and, like, 14 when you want to start finding things that are, like, bitchy and fucked up.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
We came of age at this really interesting time where, like, you know, I always talk about this, but all the movies that came out before 9/11, there's, like, Bring It On, Sugar and Spice, Drop Dead Gorgeous, the Scream movies, Charlie's Angels, like, Josie and the Pussycats, like, they're... all really jacked up and, like, violent movies, like, with women being
cheap. I would say the ultimate example of that is Jawbreaker. That is the pinnacle.
Jawbreaker. Oh my god. Yes, exactly. Where it's like high school girls fashion murder, like, and that's just like a genre.
Yeah.
Jawbreaker was huge for me.
Jawbreaker was huge for me.
So the part where she makes him give oral to the popsicle. I would watch that and then play Scream with Barbies with my cousins.
That scene in Jawbreaker, it's like, how is this legal? Like, it is crazy that happened.
It's like, can you imagine thinking up that scene and being like, yeah, I'm going to write this. I'm going to write that she, like... That's so good.
Liz McGowan was a genius. Like, she really was tapped into something back then.
Also, Scream 3, I decided to rewatch. I didn't finish Scream 3, but I was rewatching it in preparation for this podcast. And Scream 3 is so funny. Like, I'm literally laughing so hard at it. It's so good.
Yeah, let's just start there, actually. I think we can talk about Scream 3 as much as we want, because Scream 3 is like... there is no genre for it. It's like, it's pure satire. Like, it's not, it's like about trauma, and it, like, has a really beautiful arc for Neve Campbell, but, like, it is so, it's surrealist. Like, it isn't a linear horror movie in any way. Like, how would you even describe it, you know?
Well, I guess, okay, so I guess, like, my thought process with it is like, the first two movies, like, Scream 1 and Scream 2 are almost camp in disguise. Like, you can watch them and sort of take them at face value as, like, a horror slasher and not think about, like, the kind of, like, second layer that's happening of, like, the commentary on horror movies. Also, like, there's stuff that has aged into campiness, like Laurie Metcalf, Drew. Like, these things have kind of become something that they weren't at the time. Yeah. And I think it kind of, like, almost gets to keep them in the closet a little bit, where, like, the masses, like, the heterosexual masses can watch Scream 1 and Scream 2 and be like, these are normal horror movies. I don't have to feel like I'm being interrogated with anything. And then Scream 3 crosses the line into, like, full camp, like, Jenny McCarthy playing a fucking actress in it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it crosses this line into something else where I think people are like, is this gay? Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's why it was panned in this way, where, like, I think it had this vitriolic reaction where it's like, it was, the silliness is, like, threatening to the identity of a certain cohort of horror movie watchers. Yeah. But I think that's what makes it kind of brilliant and exciting.
I feel like Scream 3 was, like, there was, like, a gap between, like, 1 and 2, right? Like, there was, like, 2, it was, like, 1, then 2, and then I feel like there was, like, several years, and then 3 came out.
Yeah, let me see, because they banged them all out pretty quickly.
The biggest gap was definitely 3 and 4.
Right.
Well, and then now 4 and 5.
So, Scream 2, wow. Scream 1 was 1996. Scream 2 was 1997 and Scream 3 was 2000. So
yeah.
Yeah. And the thing about Scream 3 is also, like, Scream 1 actually did change the world. Like, slasher movies had basically been written off as dead by that point. Scream completely revived them. And Scream 1 is this, like, moment of, it's kind of the end of the 90s culture wars, or it's like the re-escalation of the 90s culture wars, where it's basically like all of these debates going on in the 90s about, like, Al Gore's wife thinking that video games are violence. Mortal Kombat causes violence. Like, all of that escalated in and became Scream, and then Scream became this new thing. And then Scream 2, like, really very, very politically, like, goes in and deals with that and, like, addresses that. And then Scream 3, it's this thing of, like, the decade is ending, we're going into a new century, and it's like, I don't know, it's like the whole world has just become Woodsboro at this point, you know?
Yeah, totally. Like, the story becomes, instead of being isolated to this one town and, like, the tone being isolated to this one town, it's now, like, this is endemic of the world that these movies take place in.
And, like, the world that we're in, because it's set in LA. Like, I don't even know how to have this conversation without, like, crawling up my own asshole. But, like, the idea of Scream 2 opening in the movie screening premiere of Stab, which is based on Scream 1, and, like, having the murder in the movie theater is so, like, beyond, you know?
Yeah.
It's so smart. I would have never. I'm like, damn, they actually know what they're doing with these movies.
Well, I think also part of it was, like, it's kind of like, I feel like, David, what you're talking about is sort of like the heightening of, like, modern culture becoming a mirror of the facade that Hollywood creates. And then how, and so, like, whereas, like, in the 90s, when you're watching a Hollywood movie, there's still a tone of, this is Hollywood, this is fake. And now, as we moved into the 2000s and into modern time, it's like, now the mentality is, you watch Hollywood movies, you watch reality television, and you think, I need to make my actual life look like that thing and reflect it back. And so that's where, like, it crosses over in Scream 3 from into the real world, is like, no, like, this happened. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And then into Scream. And then I feel like that heightens so much in Scream 4 with them being like, we want to make this real. Like, this was a movie to us because we were kids when it happened. We want to make this real for us so that we get to live this story. And I feel like that's kind of the, and I hope that they use that map to figure out whatever they're going to do in 5. I hope so too,
because I do feel like it's, what's interesting is that over the last 10 years, like, with the explosion of, like, the Robert Durst documentary, I just feel like, and all of those murder documentaries that are out, I just feel like everyone is now in this, everyone is in this world in some way. Like the whole world has become this place where like fame and murder are now so intrinsically wrapped together. And where like nothing is innocent, you know?
Yeah. Very much so. I feel like, what was I gonna say? Oh, like, what are your guys's hopes for five and fears for five?
Brian, please, actually, you go ahead.
Okay, I haven't seen the trailer for five yet.
Good for you.
I don't know what I want.
I would say, this is not a spoiler, I would say the information five reveals is that Dewey, Brenda, and Sydney are back together and there are murders. Like, there's not much revealed. Like, it's not, I think, deliberately so.
Okay. So, all right, my hopes for five is that the cast is banging. And I really don't know. I just, like, hope there's, like, cool stuff.
Like, Brian!
It's just like I just want to like go on a journey and like, you know, have my mind blown in a way.
I guess, I mean, totally. So Brian, did you see the new Matrix movie?
No.
And okay, well, that's okay, but I'm just gonna share my opinions. Whether
okay,
Jake just saw it and we were talking about it, and what I was just saying to Jake was like, the culture has changed, and like the culture is so ready for a new Matrix, and this new Matrix movie was so like bogged down by like the last movies and like the story of these characters. And it was like, I want it to like talk to what's going on now. And I want the next Scream movie to like answer to how the last 10 years have changed. And like when they released that bad remake of Carrie with Chloe Grace Moretz, they were like,
yeah,
what if we updated it so that the girls have cell phones? And it was like, that's not the update that you need to go in and like bring it here. So I just want it to, I think it needs to deal with like the way that everyone on earth, everyone in America at least, is now like an amateur murder expert basically, and like people are listening to murder podcasts all day. Like, I want it to go there. What about you, Jake?
I think that the murder podcast thing is like almost inevitable. Like, there's no way. I feel like that already was happening. I mean, that happened, I don't know if you guys watched it, but that is on the show, like Scream the series.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the like Jamie Kennedy character on the show is like a murder podcaster. And it like plays in pretty heavily. So I think that like there's definitely that. Like, I think that something of that energy will be present. And I think like, I think it could be fun. I don't want it to get like political. Like, I don't need Scream meets QAnon or anything like that.
Or like the new Halloween movie. Yeah.
Yeah, but I do think you could do something with, like, I think there's something to be interesting. There's something interesting to be done about, like, what happens when the internet has gotten to a place where you can't 100%, there's always, like, an alternative fact. Like, nothing is, like, concretely believed or denied. It's, like, you just can decide what webpage to look at to tell you what the truth is, and just you just have to believe that that's the truth. And, like, I think that could be interesting.
And that's very Scream. Like,
that's very Scream, yeah.
The thing with Scream is that Sydney is really the only sane person. Like,
yeah.
Gail has this hero redemption arc, but like the idea is that anyone can be compromised. And that's why Scream 4 is so good ultimately, because like who you think is going to be the new final girl is actually, you know, very compromised. And I do, you know, the Liev Schreiber Cotton Weary storyline is really good with that, of like this thing that is so real and horrific and traumatic is actually a bargaining chip for other people, and like something that can be negotiated, and it like can be spectacularized and serialized. And I mean, Scream 2 is great because, and Scream 3, because when Neve Campbell is wandering into the set of Stab, she's like, what's going on? Like, this is my life, you know?
Yeah. And I think part of it is, like, I think a recurring theme throughout all of the Scream movies that I think is really brilliant is this notion of sort of, like, the crushing pressure in life to know what your role is or figure out what your role is. Like, to know, like, what am I meant to do with life? What's my purpose? Like, where do I fit in? What is, like, my destiny? And it's, like, in this weird reverse psychological way, Sydney has the ultimate gift because her role is to just survive. She's too busy trying to survive to ever have to wonder, like, you know, it's like, it's the curse of being, it's the chosen one sort of thing. It's like the same with Harry yes. Potter. It's like, you know, you don't have to think about, you don't have to have, like, identity crises about, like, who am I or what am I meant to do? Because it's very clear. It's like, you just got to run and fight. Like, that's all you yes. have to do. And there's, like, a weird gift in that. And it's like, you know, Stu and Billy, part of it is, like, they're not knowing. There's obviously, like, the motive, the driving motive of, like, the revenge against their dad. But it's also this thing of, like, what if I just take on the role of a killer and now I know who I am? Now I know where I fit within this. I think that's Timothy Olyphant. And then that's definitely Emma and, is it Rory Culkin? One of the Culkins.
I think it's Rory. Yeah, he's
but it's so like,
weird.
But it's like, I think, you know, that's sort of this thing of, like, you can take on a role and it, like, it helps with that. And I think that has only heightened over the past 10 years is this sort of thing about, like, taking on an identity and stuff. And
no, that's so interesting. Like, the idea of the trauma identity, I think, is a really big thing of, like, this totally. Happened to me and now I'm going to pen an essay on Jezebel about it. And, like, Sydney is the antithesis of that. And yeah, you're right. Like, what makes the Emma Roberts character so great and thinks so disappointing for Sydney is, like, Sydney's like, okay, there's another one like me now. And then Emma Roberts is like, actually, no, like, I want to be a star. And Sydney's like, okay, well, bitch, you're gonna die. Like, you, the only way to get through is by, like, not giving in, and you've already lost, you know?
Yeah.
Would you guys ever pretend, like, did you ever pretend, like, previously in your past that, like, you were, like, fully being chased by, like, Ghostface?
In movie theaters, when I was younger and I'd have to leave the movie to go to the bathroom, I would, like, run to the bathroom as if I was being chased.
Oh my God, same. That is a queer experience. There's something so mystic about the energy of the movie theater between showings when there's no one else around. Yes. That is, like, it feels yes. like you're in a movie. It feels like you're in Disney World. It feels like you're on some sort of set where it's like, it's the same energy as, they're like the most serene feeling in the world, which is the walk to the bathroom in school. Do you know what I mean? Like, when class yes. is in session
and yeah. like the liminal space,
the hallways are empty.
Something's different.
And that is a place to imagine you are being chased by a killer, I think.
Yeah, it's a, like, liminal space.
To run down, like, an empty hallway and, like, try to open doors or whatever is, it feels so good.
Yeah. And, like, to throw things, to be, you know what I mean? Like, I would love to one day get to a place. I mean, I don't ever want to be chased by a killer for obvious reasons, but, like, the idea of running and, like, throwing something behind you to, like, block their path.
Yes.
Very fun.
Well, I think what's interesting, because I love everything about Scream 2, but, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar has this really interesting part in it where she's like, I want to be a final girl. I don't want it to be complicated. I'm shooting Buffy 22 episodes a year. Just, like, give me something. And she has this really very classical, just, like, she's running up a stair. She pushes a bike at him. He catches her. He kills her. He throws her out a balcony. And it's like, oh, that must just, she really just, like, kind of wanted to have fun, which is, like, I want to scream. I want to run around. I want to answer the phone, you know?
Yeah.
Like a dream. That's, like, my dream day.
And it's, you have the hair.
I mean, that is, like, that is part of what is so delicious in Scream. Like, the fucking, the, like, triple level intro to Scream 4, where it's, like, the girls from Pretty Little Liars into Kristen Bell and Anna Paquin into the girl from Friday Night Lights, and that's the real one. Like, it takes three levels to get there. Is so
I could have watched, like, 2 hours of that.
Yeah, I agree.
Just, like... Yeah, I don't know.
I agree. And, like, actually, that's, like, what I said to Jake Okay, I told you this, Brian.
Like,
but
wait,
like,
is it gonna be? Sorry. Is Scream 5 gonna open up with like Charlie D'Amelio killing Addison Rae? Like, is that what's gonna happen?
They have to take it. It has to. That's the thing with the Screams is like, the opening has to be the opening and ending has to be a gag. You know,
always.
Because Scream 4, I think a lot of Scream 4, the bulk of the movie, I'm like, okay, we're like, you know, Courtney and David are getting divorced. Like, Wes Anderson's kind of in his final years. Like, okay, but the beginning and the end of Scream 4, you're just like, okay, fuck, they got me. Like, they got me so hard. And yeah. Scream 5, I'm like, girls, you just gotta bring it. Like, you gotta flip it, you know?
Anytime you feel lost, if there's no wind in your sails while you're making Scream 5, just go back and watch the clip of Emma Roberts running full tilt at a wall and just be like, this is the energy. This is the energy that needs to be there. It's so good. The Emma Roberts, like, setting the scene after she thinks Sydney's dead montage is like heaven.
Yeah, it's like, it's the classic thing of like, I could do that.
Well, I do, Brian, think like that idea of like, you're Emma Roberts or you're Laurie Metcalf and you get the call and it's like, why don't you read these pages of your monologue that we're going to give you? And Laurie Metcalf, like Tony Emmy winner, is like, you know what? Like, this is like, Laurie Metcalf has pages of monologues and Emma Roberts does too at the end. And it's like, this is pure fun. Like, it's so like meaty, you know?
Yeah. They're icon. I mean, I genuinely think Matthew Lillard should have an Oscar for Scream 1 for best supporting.
I agree. It is, there's nothing like it on earth. Like, there is no, I can't compare that to any other performance.
It's genius. Yeah.
What's Matthew up to these days?
Yeah, I feel like he's just like on Twitter. I don't really know what
he
does.
I think he has a podcast. I think he acts. I think he does a lot of voice acting, maybe. I recently looked this up but
Yeah. Okay. I think, you know, Jake, what you were saying earlier about Scream 2, about her, like, not Scream 2, about Sydney generally being the chosen one.
Yeah.
I do think Scream 2 is, like, the most Buffy of them, because Scream 2, it's, like, her trying to have a normal life when she still thinks that that's possible, and, like, her just realizing, like, no, you've been chosen for this thing, and, like, you have to face it. And especially the scene in Scream 2 where she's like talking to her theater teacher and then she is in a performance of Elektra as Cassandra. It's like, that's what I love about Scream 2 is that it's so dramatic and it's like, it mythologizes Sydney no longer just as like incidentally the survivor, but like she becomes like the ultimate final girl, you know?
Yes. And like, and also in this way where it's like, you're going to be this thing, so get good at it. Like when she double taps Lori at the end, it's like, she's like, if this is going to be me, I'm going to do it right. And I know how to do this and kind of take on the onus of like, you know, some girls are gymnasts and I'm a final girl. Like that's like my calling in life. And I think that's like what Scream 2 is. And that's why Scream, like, I think Scream 3 has an energy of, Scream 3 is like, oh, you guys all think this is a game, you're making it into a movie. And then Scream 4 is kind of like, oh, you young idiots, like you think you got this, but like, trust me, like just let the pros handle it. You know what I mean?
Yes. And Scream 4, she has that great line to Emma Roberts where she's like, you'll slip, they always do. And it's like, fuck.
Yeah.
And in Scream 2, I love, maybe like one of my favorite parts of that movie is this. First of all, Scream 2 is just so good. And like, I think all the murders are so creative, but the scene where she and her roommate Hallie are trapped in the car with the killer and the killer's unconscious and she has to crawl over the killer. And
genius.
She has this line to herself where she's like, I hate this shit.
Yes.
That scene was pivotal for me as a child.
Tell me.
Mostly just I was like, anytime I was in the backseat of a car, I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to crawl over this person.
Well, also the scene in Buffy when Buffy and Faith get arrested and they're both in the backseat of the car, of the cop car, and they decide to break out.
Oh, good.
And they both just like kick the wiring and like crash the car and leave. It's like there's a lot of like girls in the backs of cars having to break out.
Yeah. That's the sequel to Driving in Cars with Boys, is girls in the back of the car that need to break out.
Yeah. I just think like there's something in Scream 2 where Neve Campbell is like, this is not just like a freak thing that happened to me. Like, this is reality now. And, yeah. And I like, as the movies progress, they do this thing, like, especially in Scream 3 and Scream 4 and probably in the new one where David Arquette, it's like, Neve Campbell's living her life. David Arquette calls her and he's like, it's happening again. And she's like, okay. Like, it's just, it becomes this thing where like the murder metaphor gets stronger, I think, because it's no longer like a random thing that happens in small town America. It's like, this actually is America now. And like, if you're Neve Campbell, you're just either going to hide or you're going to fight. And if you're everyone else, you're going to like, you're a part of it, you know?
Yes. Okay, I have a question.
Please.
Kind of relating back to the predictions for Scream 5, what do you guys think Neve Campbell's character has been up to these past, like, however many years? Do you think she's still in, like, California?
Yes.
I don't know why I was like, why are you still in California, girl? Move.
I know.
Move. There, Ghostface isn't going to go, like, to Europe, you know?
I would love if they showed her, like, fucking, like, I would love if they showed her like having like with a man or like having some active relationships and not just being like,
yeah,
this lone warrior. But you know, I hope her career as an author is going well.
I think Sydney is probably very antisocial. I think she's gotten to, I don't think she loves the people. I see her working. I see her taking a lot of self-defense classes and finding people very annoying. And I see her like, in terms of like her job, I'm like, maybe she works in, I bet it's like it's going to be like internet-y. It's going to not like media, but like, yeah. I don't know.
I bet they're going to have her running a nonprofit, like to help women or something. Yeah, and my dream is that Gail Weathers is a Fox News correspondent. Like, I want Gail. That's
not what's gonna happen, I feel like, but.
Fuck. Cause that was my biggest issue with Scream 4 is I was like, Gail would not, like, Gail is not sitting in the suburbs. I'm sorry. What like, would Gail be genius, needs a mission.
What would be genius is if it's a little bit of like, Gail has fallen a little bit and Gail is the My Favorite Murder podcaster and Sydney's kind of like, this is gross. Like, it's gross that you do this, because Gail like would, because the check is so good. Like, those podcasts make so much money that Gail probably would and could, because she's Gail Weathers. And who I'm realizing earlier this podcast, I called Brenda. Why did I do Brenda, that?
I didn't want to say anything. And that is, you know.
Oh, it's because you're wearing a 90210 shirt. That's literally what it was.
Thank you, babe.
Jesus.
Yeah, no, but
that makes so much sense.
Like, I think that's what she'll be doing.
She's like, Sydney, be a guest. And Sydney's like, no, never.
Yeah, fuck off. Yeah.
I think like Gail to me, first of all, I told you about this, but like I was watching the Scream making of special features recently, like Scream 1. And there's this interview with Courtney Cox where she's like, I wanted Gail Weathers because I wanted to play a bitch. I was on Friends and I really didn't want to always be that role and I wanted to be a bitch. And it's like, okay, so you're iconic, first of all. Secondly, like, Gail does this thing that I love that I think about. It's kind of like Magneto in the X-Men movies where it's like, she is just this X factor that takes the movies and actually like, the reason that I have a lot of issues with the new Halloween movies and like the latest one I really struggled with, and like they don't really have a Gail Weathers and they need one. Like, they need that other, they need that countervailing force that like kind of throws everything into chaos. And I, especially with Scream, actually the whole first trilogy, like Gail is as essential as Neve Campbell, and she like makes Neve Campbell a little tougher, you know?
Yeah, she's this buff, she acts as a buffer where she gets to exist as the moral gray area between the evil and the pure good that is Sydney.
Yes.
And kind of like pull Sydney just far enough into the dark side to get shit done. But the stuff that really needs you to get up in the dirt, Gail will do. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And it's like, and it also, it creates like a more fully 360 world of like morality where it's like, why do I keep calling her Brenda? I'm losing my mind. Gail, like, my thought is coming back now that I get her, I have her name right. Gail, like, is not a wholly good person, but she's right. not evil. She's not gonna kill. She has emotions. She's not a sociopath. She's like gonna get shit done, and she's like not an idealist, but she's like, it's that conversation of like good people versus nice people. And I think at her core, Gail Weathers is a good person to a neutral person, but she's not evil. And it's like that showing that kind of makes things a little bit more rich so that we then see like who the evil is.
I love the scene in Scream 2 when Cotton Weary has just been arrested for like harassing Sydney in the library, and Gail is like, bitch, what are you doing? Like, he's like, Gail, you promised me my moment with Sydney, and she's like, what do you think is going on? Like, people are dying. Like, I like how especially Scream 2 is like Gail's movie. Gail has like a full arc, and I love when she's like, I want to get this fucker. But like Scream 2, Gail is like, okay, I'm not a sociopath. Like, I actually do, I want the story, but like I have a part to play in the story.
And she's falling in love with Dewey, which is making her realize what she actually might care about. Yeah.
Right. And then Scream 1, she's just like, I just don't think they write characters like that anymore. Like, she's just fabulous.
She's fabulous. She's over the top. I'm a Courtney Cox stan. Do you guys know this about me? Like, I've watched every episode of Cougar Town. Every single episode.
Okay, that's right.
And there were a lot. And it was good. Like, I love Courtney. And I think, I don't know if she doesn't work. Like, I think she's so good at comedy and like dark comedy.
Yeah.
Like, in a way that she doesn't get. I just feel like she should be like, and she doesn't need to work, like, Lord knows, between Scream and Friends, the woman's very much fine. But like, I just selfishly would love to see her have, like, she had Cougar Town and she had a show that no one remembers called Dirt, where she played like an evil TMZ magnate.
Named Lucy Spiller.
Genius. Go back and watch Dirt. It's good. One of the main plot lines is that she needs to get choked to come. But like, it's so good.
That, like, HBR showtime.
Oh, FX, baby.
It's and this is Nip Tuck era FX. So like, this is really the truth.
This is like me watching on the lowest volume in my bedroom with my finger on the previous channel button so that I could change it to Nick at Night if my mom came in.
Yes.
Watching Dirt on FX. But like, Courtney is due for a show like that again. Like, now.
I agree.
Like, and I think that could bring back those kind of characters, because I think that is a specific kind of character that Courtney is so good at.
I just think Scream 1, like, when I watch her in Scream 1, I'm like, so you're a movie star one, and like, you are cinema. Like, the shot, first of all, her costumes in Scream 1, to die for, and it's
to
like
die for.
It's, I think it's she bar. It's either the same costume designer as Romy and Michelle, or it's like the costume designer of Romy and Michelle, they were friends and she like borrowed a jacket from that movie. But like, Gail Weathers is, she just like arrives on the scene and she just like I'm trying to explain this. Like, to me, it's like a classic cinematic arrival is when that character shows up in town, where you're just like, I'm watching Lois Lane, I'm watching Katharine Hepburn, like, I am watching like a real only in the movies type of character. And I agree with you, Jake, like her range in that movie, like, I think Neve Campbell does this thing so well. I think Courtney Cox, like, she has these really campy, bitchy lines that are so funny. Like the scene when she gets in the van in Scream 1 and the blood is coming down and she like, she screams, her camera guy's body falls off. It's like really funny, but also really fucked up. And like, she's doing all of it, you know?
Do you know what I think part of it might be? Is like in the 90s and in the early 2000s, you would expect the way that like male dominated Hollywood works. Oftentimes in horror movies, and especially like irreverent horror movies, the like cunty bitchy woman will get a torturous, brutal death scene to like put her in her place. Like that's what happens. And you would expect that of Gail at all times, is like they're gonna just gut her and be like, this, look at this smug bitch now, like see where she ended up. And they never do. Like she always ends up on top because she is that bitch. She is smart. She is, you know what I mean? And I think as like gay men, and I think probably women too, watching it, it's like very gratifying to be like, oh yeah, this woman's a fucking boss and this movie isn't gonna like punish her for it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, especially what I love about Scream 1, Scream 2, and I would definitely say Scream 4 as well, is like, yeah, David Arquette's usually there, but really all of those movies end with Nev Campbell and Courtney Cox like standing over the body of the killer, usually with multiple guns in their hands, and it's like,
oh yeah, and Dewey is like practically dead every time. Like,
always, always. Yeah. And like you have this triumphant image of these two sort of feminine like warrior archetypes, which is like Gail, who's the kind of power monger bitch, and Sydney, who's the like victim turned survivor, and they're both just like, I don't even particularly like you, but like, will you help me out? Like, let's fucking kill these guys. I don't know. There's something about that, like that nothing else ever captures, you know?
I see a world where Scream 5 is about, like, is sort of almost a commentary on cancel culture, where they start to frame Gail, Dewey, and Sydney for all the old murders and be like, these people, you know what I mean? And it's like, they actually did it. And like society starts to turn on them and think they did it. But there's clearly like a new killer out there.
That's Scream. Like that to me, that's what I want, you know?
Yeah. Wait, I'm actually really hoping that's what happens. I would write that movie in a heartbeat. Hi, producers of Scream. If you didn't do that for Scream 5, call me. I'll write Scream 6. I'll do it. Send this to the producers of Scream. I'm not joking.
You know, my issue with, I had a lot of issues with the new Matrix, but I felt like the new Matrix, which did a Matrix in a Matrix, I was like, you guys want to be Scream. There were so many scenes in the new Matrix that reminded me of Scream 3 and Scream 4. And I was like, you're doing what Scream 3 and Scream 4 did, but Scream 3 and Scream 4 did it better, in my opinion. And like, that sort of a thing of like, we are taking this thing that happened in the original and we're inverting it. I don't think any movie does that like Scream 3 and Scream 4 do. And I just think like it's what they pull off is really insane, you know?
Yes. I don't think I would be who I am without Scream. I feel like I just feel like in like the 90s, they kind of like invented like satire or like meta or whatever. And I'm like,
I
kind of just like didn't know that existed on like such like that type of level. And then I was like, wait, this is like what my life is. And it's just been like that ever since.
Brian, can you explain to us or explain to viewers who maybe aren't as familiar, like what is Parker Posey's role in Scream 3?
To literally be a cartoon in the Scream thing. She's like, everything she does is insane. There's a part where they're in the car and she's like in the back seat and Courtney Cox and David Arquette are in the front, and then they get a call to like go to the house because Sydney's supposed to be there. Parker like leans in between the two. She puts her ear like up to the phone to listen in. And then when they both tell her to shut up, she like is in the back seat. Like there's no zoom in or anything, but she just like cups like her legs to her chest. Like she's like a child or something. I'm like, it's everything she does is so good in that movie. And yeah, that's what I want to be.
It's a purely comedic. It's like, they're like, you are in Best in Show. you're gonna, or maybe that hadn't even come out yet, but they were like, you are going to do a purely comedic performance where you are the foil to Courtney Cox, who is playing Courtney Cox in a movie version of this movie that you're in, and you're just gonna die at the end. Like, that's it. It's genius.
It's like, it's true. It's pure magic. It's like, that's it's everything.
And they have her dating David Arquette. Like, it's so, there's a lot there.
She does not a single thing in that movie that is like normal, you know? Even the way she like walks is just like so like people don't like move like that, you know?
Brian, have you seen the Blade movies?
I've seen the first one.
So the main, like, one of the main villains of Blade 3 is Parker Posey as a vampire. Like, she is the villain of the movie, of an action movie, and it is like so insane to watch in the best way.
In in her memoir, she talks about how when she got offered Blade 3, she was like, I'm not doing this, vampires are stupid. And her team at like UTA was like, Parker, you really need to show Hollywood that you're a team player, because you're getting a reputation for being like a difficult indie actress. So she was like, fine, I'll do it. So she's doing Blade Trinity, which is this like $150 million movie. And they like have her on the rig where she's like on a flight rig. And she keeps turning to the director being like, I don't think my character would do this. Like, maybe my character should have a scene where I'm doing that. And they keep being like, thank you for that suggestion, Parker. Like, as if Blade 3 is going to like take any of her suggestions for how she would want to like improvise the character. But Scream 3 is like a perfect fit for her, where it's like 100%. She can really go wild.
Yeah. I mean, it's also genius. Like, all of the Blade movies after Blade, Jesus Christ. All of the Scream movies after Scream 1 have a running theme about like how fame makes people act crazy around famous people. Like, that's like a recurring theme. And I think that is so rife for comedic slash dramatic performance. Like, this, that tone where it's like funny how these people are acting, but there is also like a darkness to it. Like, you know what I mean? And that's so prevalent in Scream, like, especially 3. 4.
Yeah, and like in Scream 3, Emily Mortimer, who's playing Sydney, like, they have that scene where she meets Sydney and she's like, I wanted to make you proud, and Neve Campbell's just like, okay. Like, don't talk, like, don't put this on me, like, we're not the same, like, I don't want to be this, you know?
I want to say that to somebody.
I wanted to make you proud, Sydney. What does Sydney's mom say when she's like, you're poison, you're just like me, you know, in Scream 3. Yes.
Oh my God.
I think Jenny McCarthy's death in Scream 3, Jenny McCarthy's death where she's reading the script of her own murder as she's about to be murdered, it's like, you know, how do you top that?
By starting an anti-vax movement that kills millions.
Thank you.
Because that was her next move.
She is a very powerful Scorpio. It needs to be said. I also think like the scene, this to me is like, I wish the Wachowskis had watched Scream 3, and maybe they did, but like the scene where Sydney is going into a set of her childhood home from Scream 1, that's like a higher level, you know? Like, that's like, we've gone all the way.
Yes. Well, making it about, that is what also makes it, that is the only reason I do get nervous for 5, is because they've had such beautiful full circle moments. Like, I feel like Scream 3 closed the circle of like the movie Hollywood commentary on it, because we like went into the movie. And then Scream 4 kind of closed the circle on like fandom culture, like, I'm wanting the fame. So it's like, what does Scream 5 closed the loop on. And I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just like, that's kind of like what you have to think about, because it's like, you don't want to reopen these things we kind of nailed. Like, we kind of got them. You know what I mean? We talked about them in a really whole 360 way.
And Scream 4, like, I think Scream 4 definitively subverted the entire Final Girl narrative.
No one, I don't feel like, do people say that twist was predictable? Because I was like, oh, gap. No. Like,
No one. Maybe anyone who does, I'm like, there's no way. And just like the level that they took it to of like Emma Roberts trying to kill Sydney on her hospital bed, like, I just don't, no.
It also continues this dynasty I was talking about of like things aging beyond the movie in a way that like they couldn't have known. Like, when that movie came out, like, Emma Roberts wasn't known as like kind of a villain in this way that's like I love Emma Roberts, but like, do I want to run into her when she's like having a bad day? Like, absolutely not. Do you know what I mean? It's like, she kind of has that reputation. I will say though, one time I saw Emma Roberts and Evan Peters walking down the sidewalk near Union Square, and someone stopped them for an autograph, and my stomach dropped because I was like, Emma Roberts is going to rip this woman's head off. And she so kindly was like, oh my God, yeah, let me get a Sharpie. Pulled a Sharpie out, like, signed this girl's thing, and like kept going. And I like was like, oh yeah, because like, gossip is gossip. Like, this isn't Dumois. Like, she's a normal person. But like, I actually was like, Emma Roberts is gonna kill that girl, and then like, didn't. She's like totally nice to her.
I feel like in her head she did kill that girl.
Yeah,
in her head she fully just like,
she used like a marker that has anthrax in it, and yeah, she's like, that bitch will die in 5 days. Like,
but you are right. There is this thing where it's like, it did. You're right. Like, Emma Roberts, they do kind of. It really was a gag at that moment. Like, she didn't have that edge to her yet. She really was kind of like a teen girl who was Julia Roberts.
She had like a Nickelodeon show. Yeah.
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 So I don't know. I think I really had issues with did either of you see the newest Halloween movie?
No.
And okay. Well,
but I know all about it. I like read a lot.
It like, okay. They like try to bring in this like, Trump's America, like, they try to like take it way too political, and I was like, you know, why don't you leave this for Scream? Like, you, yeah, this is not your job. Like, Halloween is like purely about Halloween is purely like warrior feminism, and also just like Jungian confrontations with like mortality. But Scream, it's like, I am down for people, like, the way the country has gone, the way that like school shootings have become a thing, like, all of that, I'm like, Scream can do whatever it wants. Like, I hope that Scream can, yeah, I like your idea of Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, and David Arquette like as these constant survivors then being gaslit into like, well, they're the villains. They did it.
And
you know?
Being gaslit with that language of like being like, oh, like Sydney being like, you don't know what it was like. You haven't been gone through this. And they're being like, oh, so she's gatekeeping now. Do you know what I mean? Like, that sort of thing. Like, they can like, it has this right thing. But the thing is, like, I think part of what you're talking about is like, in terms of saying like, leave it to Scream for like the Halloween movies, is like, the Scream movies have always been, since the first one, commentary. Like, yes, they are by design commentary pieces. Like, the first one is a commentary on like horror movies and like 90s film culture. And then like, it just goes from there. Whereas and they're like commentaries before they're horror movies. Like, they're commentaries first. And like, Halloween is like a slasher first. And then like, what is the commentary behind it? Warrior feminism. Do you know what I mean? And so it's like,
exactly.
Scream can kind of take on any topic if done well. And it doesn't feel forced because it's always been commentating. The whole time.
You're right. I think like for a long time, the opening of Scream 2 with Jada Pinkett's death, I was always like, this is so weird. But then once I understood that it was literally Kevin Williamson being like, oh, you want to say that our movie is part of this debate about like violence and about like the Scream movies causing violence, like, I will put you in the movie theater with a woman who dies and I will like recenter this whole thing. Like, I do like what you're saying, where it's like, they have to decide on the They have to decide on what they want to satirize, and then the murders follow, and then it's really good. Like, and that's Scream 2, all the murders are really about, like, surveillance and, like, performance. Like, Dewey almost gets killed in, like, a sound recording studio.
Oh my God, it's so good.
It's so good. And Courtney Cox, like, gives the performance of a lifetime when the killer's trying to get into the sound room and she's just, like, screaming. And Scream 3, like, all of the murders are based on the idea that they're already in a movie. I think some of the killings in Scream 4 aren't my favorite just because I don't feel like there's anything going on with them until, like, unless the ones at the very beginning and the very end. And I think you're right, Jake. Like, if the commentary comes first, the murders and, like, the setting get to realign with that, you know?
Yeah. It's like when Scream is at its best because it knows what it always knows what it's talking about, you know, and that is what I hope they do for 5. And I have, the thing is, like, I actually really trust, like, I think Nev, Courtney, and David, like, know the tone, like, the way they perform the movie so well. I think they also kind of know these things that we're talking about. And I have faith that if the script had been, like, totally devoid of any of that, they would have been like, no. Because, like, at some point, like,
I agree.
Sure, like, they all, none of them need, David might, but, like, they don't, like, Courtney and Nev don't need, like, $10 million, you know what I mean? They, like, are they happy to get it? Sure. But I do think at that point, you get these scripts for these, like, beloved franchises, and there's definitely, like, a protective element, you know what I mean? Where it's, like, this, if this was truly bad, I don't know that they would do it, you know?
I think with them going back to Woodsboro again, what I want it to be, I think it needs to be stated that, like, the idea.
Wait, do you know who Woodsboro? One of the main characters in the new one is going to be? One of the Woodsboro girls is going to be?
Who?
Taissa from Yellow Jackets.
Oh, I forgot that.
Yeah.
Brian, I'm are really you a Yellow Jackets excited. Girl?
No.
Babe, you got to get on Yellow Jackets.
I know.
Brian, you'll be a Yellow Jackets girl, I think.
I think I will be by the end of the week.
Okay. Let me know if you need my Showtime login. Yeah. It has a lot of things, like, that you like.
Okay.
I think, like, what I want them to do with them going back to Woodsboro is, like, the idea of Woodsboro, like, the idea of an idyllic town, which in 1996 there was, like, this sort of thing, you know, there's always a lie to this. There's always betrayal and rape and murder in these sorts of places. Mm-hmm. What I want them to do now that we're going back for, like, the third time is this idea of, like, the small town doesn't exist. Like, this is completely a fantasy. And, like, to play with that a lot, because they, in Scream 4, they were like, yeah, we're going back to Woodsboro. And then it all just kind of, and they're like, we're going to introduce a new cast of teens. And then they kill all of them, which is so psycho. And in this, I'm like, I want Woodsboro to feel as surreal as the set of Woodsboro in Scream 3, you know, because it doesn't exist anymore.
Totally. I think I see a world where it is. I would also love, they never confirmed that Hayden Panettiere was dead at the end of Scream 4. And I would love a Hayden pop-up. Like, if, imagine, it wouldn't make sense, but imagine if at the end of Scream 5, they unmask Ghostface and it's Hayden Panettiere.
And she's 4 foot tall.
I will throw my phone overhand, full speed at the screen, enjoy. I will be so excited.
I mean, I have to say, I really didn't want her to die because of all the actors in Scream 4.
She was the
4.
Best,
like,
part of Scream 4.
She really gives it. I think she really, like, she gets one of the better monologues of the franchise, and, like, she really tears it. And I was really sad that she died because I was like, God, you had to kill her too? Like, give me.
And
it's a bloodbath.
Pissed me off. And that Rory kills her. Like, it's not even
I
Emma.
Know.
I was like, that sucks.
That would have been good. If Emma had killed her.
Emma had killed her, it would have been better.
Yeah, Rory, he really creeps me out. He unsettles me.
Is he the one that's on Succession?
I don't think it's Rory.
No, it's his brother.
Like, it is Rory, because Kieran is Succession. Right, okay.
Right. As Ruby says, the Culkins are New York's only acting dynasty. because they all are from Manhattan. I'm wondering what, it's weird also that Patrick Dempsey survives and like literally no one else ever survives these movies. It's like he gets to live and not Hayden Panettiere, not Sydney's roommate Hallie. Like, give me a break, you know?
I forgot Patrick Dempsey is in Scream 4.
Scream 3.
Oh, right. Sorry. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Detective Kincaid.
Nice throwback. I guess I'm curious, like, are there any other favorite scenes or performances or moments or outfits that we need to cover?
I mean, I think just all three or all of Brenda's hairstyle. Brenda, oh my fucking Brenda's. God. All of Gail's hairstyles are so iconic. I think my favorite is 2. The chunky highlights in 2 are really something else.
Those highlights are insane.
They're so insane. I love them so much.
I mean, I just think like her look in Scream 1 when she's at the high school and she's in like the full look with the bangs and she's just like, hi. It's like, she looks in, it's outrageous. Like, it is so outrageous. And also I love her look in the party scene in Scream 1 when she like goes into the teen house party and everyone's like, I love your show. And she's like, uh-huh. And she's wearing that cute little headband. It's all good. Yeah. Brian, do you have any favorites?
Scream 2, I felt like there was just so much like leather / pleather in that one.
Yes.
And I was like, damn, I need to get some of this. Like literally
Scream
every,
2
every
is,
jacket
yeah.
Or pants, like leather pants. I'm like,
ugh. Wait, genuine question. Do we know if anywhere in New York is doing a midnight showing, like midnight showing on the 13th?
I know that there's some 7 p.m. showings on the 13th, actually.
Wait, because I have to fly to Nashville on the Friday. I need to see it on the Thursday.
So we're going on Thursday. So we are going on Thursday, and that's just what's happening. Yeah, I don't want to see. I, like Brian, I have avoided watching the trailer. I've only heard it because every time I went to see Dune, they had a Scream trailer and I would put a coat over my face so I wouldn't have anything ruined. So I want to go on Scream. I don't want any homosexuals on Twitter to ruin anything for me.
I know.
I don't want to hear any takes. I have to just see it fresh. Because when I saw Scream 4 in theaters and that happened with Emma Roberts, I was like, okay, I can still be really gagged out of my mind, you know?
Wait, so it comes out next Friday. / Thursday.
Yes, but Thursday, which is, I know, it's really.
And I have a show at 8 p.m. and I'm like, do I cancel the show?
Let me make some phone calls I'll see what's possible for us. I have no doubt that we can make something work.
I'm gonna look into it.
The last thing I want to say is, I just want to say like, Rose McGowan's work in Scream 1 and Drew Barrymore's work in Scream 1. I just think like I'm always going to believe that those women are geniuses because of their work, you know?
I agree. Ooh, okay, wait. I found some Scream show times at work, so we're going to do
okay,
it. Good. I found the times.
And I also want to say Drew Barrymore
Rose
was
so good. I'm sorry. Rose is so good.
She's incredible. Her skirt is so good. Like it's really that and Jawbreaker. You're like, oh, you were really on one, you know?
Yeah.
I saw this interview with Drew where she's like, they had offered her Sydney and she was like, I want to be Cece. Once Drew was the first actor they got, like once they got Drew, the movie basically was happening because it was kind of floating. And then like Drew was like, no, I'm in. And they were like, okay, well, we have Drew Barrymore. And then everyone else was like, okay, well I want to do this. And then the movie just like came together. So like Drew Barrymore, producer of the Charlie's Angels movies and the producer of Donnie Darko, like we owe her.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Drew is one of, what is Drew's sign?
Pisces.
Oh, duh. Brian just lit up.
Pisces moon. That's me.
That's Nate.
Pisces.
Yeah, X Factor. Yeah, she's a Pisces. She does have that ability to be like, I'm reading, I see something special and I can like tap into it. And she's the one who approached Demi Moore about Charlie's Angels too. She was the one who was like, Demi, it's going to be fun. We wrote it for you. Like, let's just do it. And Demi was like, okay, fine. You know?
That's brilliant.
Do we have any closing thoughts we'd like to share about Scream, Screamology, all of it?
I feel like I say this about everything. Like, I've been saying this about Sex and the City. I've been saying this about, but it's like, I would encourage you when you're going, approach it hoping it's good. Don't approach it as a cynic, you know, approach. Yeah. I'm like, I'm an advocate of approaching things with the hope that they are good, because I think sometimes, you know how like things oftentimes, I think like, you know, things that like are panned at the time and then like 10 years later, it's like, what are you talking about? That was incredible. That is a product of people approaching the property with the assumption it's bad and watching it through that lens beforehand. And then that lens fades over time. And then this work stands for itself. Don't be caught looking like an asshole. Approach it, if it's good, as though it's good. And if it's bad, you will know. Like, but approach it hoping it's good.
Brian?
I just feel like we're entering a cultural like touchstone with Scream 5, and it will kind of like set the tone for the rest of the decade, I feel like.
As Scream 4 did too. You know, Scream 4 definitely set the tone for the last decade. So
we all have iPhones now because of Scream 4.
Exactly. And yeah, I agree with you, Jake, because I think like it would have been easy to go to Scream 3 or Scream 4 as a cynic, and like that would have been a waste, because as you know, as Brian can attest, like Scream 3 is a masterpiece that could be watched every day, you know. Where can people follow both of you in case they aren't already?
I am at Jake W. Cornell on all platforms.
Same, but at, but at Brian _ Bahi.
Okay, absolute slay. Boys, really, thank you for this. This
anytime.
This is major, and I guess I'll see you when we go see it.
Yes.
I can't wait.
Okay. Love you.
Love you.
The Luminaries is recorded with love in New York City. If you've enjoyed this show, please subscribe, share, rate, review, and etc. If you would like a tarot or astrology reading with me, David Odyssey, you can go to davidodyssey.com or follow me on Instagram, David_Odyssey. And of course, be sure to read my nylon column and tell everyone you know about the Luminaries. I am excited for whatever the hell is coming next. Let's do it together. Mwah.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community and of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.